the podcast.
It is a podcast. Hello, everyone.
Oh, man. The dogs are barking. I figured out they were barking because it's windy in LA, and one of the doors like blew open.
Oh, that's a real reason to bark.
Yeah, sort of. It's like an upstairs door. It's not like people could get in. So.
Oh, okay. Well,
dogs barking.
Good instinct, maybe a little overkill, but it's nice that they're looking out for you. This is the podcast, Yo, Is This Racist?, where we listen to your voicemails about racism eventually with the help of a special guest or guest. We have a great guest this episode. We will get to that interview with her. But we are first, I'm Tawny Newsome, that's Andrew T.
Yep.
Producer Kevin Bartelt is on the ones and twos. I guess it's more like on the ones and zeros.
Oh, damn.
A little computer digital joke for you guys.
Nice. Love it.
Anyway, first we do some current events and news, and it has been quite a terrible week. So this is when it's, you know, hard to do this show, but we at least wanted to mention some of the things that happened.
Yep.
So this past week, amidst the Derek Chauvin trial in Minnesota, we had another unarmed black man who was committing no crime pulled over and murdered by a cop, by Kim Porter. And, you know, he was 20 years old. He was a father. I'm sure you've seen it trending that he just had too many air fresheners in his rearview mirror. I both get annoyed with that kind of oversimplification of what happened because it feels in some way disrespectful to the person who was killed. But I also understand why people are trying to point out that black people are just literally doing nothing, just trying to live and exist and doing absolutely nothing that warrants being killed or even stopped or even tased. Kim Porter claimed, or Potter, I don't know. She claimed that she was reaching for her taser, which also nobody needs to be tased over that shit either.
Yeah. The fact that that's one of the defenses is like, that wasn't good either. She should, like, the fuck are you talking about?
And yeah, the only thing that I really have to say is that while it's awful to me that it takes kind of like a Twitter outcry and a national outcry to get any consequences for these people, because at first all they did was suspend her, or you know, they said she was taking a leave or she'd been fired. But everyone was like, no, this is a criminal act. She needs to be, you know, charged. Yeah. And that didn't happen until people got really, really loud about it. And for once, I would just like people to do the right thing and charge these criminal cops right away.
Yeah. Like as we've seen so many, you know, and in Chicago, it's like, I know many people who are like smart and more or less right, who really like dislike the phrase like defund the police or like police abolition. But you know, as you can see from the responses, like the police are, and then so in the intervening week, the police in Minnesota and in Chicago have been rioting. They have been creating violence with protesters, with people at vigils. Like they have been flying the thin blue line flag. Mm-hmm. Like they are committing violence. Like Minnesota is, or like what was it, Brooklyn Center is the name of the city, I guess. Is if you look at the photos, they are under military occupation. There are people with, you know, armed men, mostly with automatic weapons in every corner and doing things like, you know, arresting and assaulting people for protesting vigils, peaceful, like completely peaceful. It is just, you know, and then in Chicago, everyone from the DAs to all the police to the mayor, like, tried to claim that the kid had a gun, which you can see in the video is not there. Like, the entire system of law enforcement is corrupt and racist.
And is complicit. So that was about the murder of Adam Toledo, who was 13 years old. And literally, you know, we're encouraging you not to watch the video out of respect for the dead and for his family. But you can see screenshots of him standing there with his hands up if you need any fucking proof. So again, don't share that video, but you can follow accounts. There's an account in Chicago called Good Kids Mad City, which is a youth account dedicated to ending violence, located in Chicago. That's a good one to follow. But yeah, the entire system is complicit. Mayor Lightfoot even said the day before the video was going to be released, she called for peace. And you only call for peace if you know that what's in that video is so damning.
Yeah.
And calling for peace, who does that serve? Calling for peace just serves the cops.
Yeah.
There is
She isn't calling for the cops to act peacefully. Right.
And she's not calling for peace. She's calling for obedience because the protests were peaceful. I know people there. If you look at videos that people took who are standing right there, these are peaceful protests. Yes, there are some people who take it too far, but largely it's peaceful. And so...
And as far as like take it too far, I mean, we've seen it all of last year. Like when it goes, quote, too far is when the police show up. Like, you know, the police cause this. Absolutely. They cause... The looting, they cause, I mean, you know, it is like the classic victim blaming that racists and police apologists, one and the same, like to do. It's like, oh, well, if you didn't commit the crime, you don't have anything to hide, you won't have any problem with the cops. Like, hey, cops, if you didn't commit racist murders, there wouldn't be any property damage. Like, it's like the cause and effect of it is so... just fucked and evil. And I mean, I don't know. I guess I just don't know what other evidence people need that like it is not bad apples. It is like every cop is complicit in this shit. You know, and you can see it. I think the I mean and like, you know, Mayor Lightfoot even lied. She lied and said the kid had a gun after she had seen the tape. So that's like, you know, truly like repellent. And also like, there's no fixing that.
Right.
There's no fixing someone who thinks they can lie like that in the face of evidence. Right. And then is like, oh my bad, please be peaceful. It's like, no.
And yeah. And there's a, you know, it's slightly conflicting, but not really. It's not really conflicting. Let me start by saying that before I say the other thing I was going to say before y'all jump on me. But, you know, Mayor Lightfoot is one of the few Black women, one of the few queer women mayors, and she stay fucking up. Don't get me wrong. She a mess. But Chicago ain't had a good mayor since Harold Washington, and I will go to my grave saying that. Our first Black mayor was the only one worth a damn, and I lived there through at least four of them, and it was a mess, all of them. The corruption is baked into the city. So while it is not their fault, they are not doing anything to fix it, and they are accepting that job and upholding the corruption. But, you know, recently all these rumors about her love life, about an affair, about, you know, money that she's taken to live in a mansion or some shit started surfacing, and I just, and, you know, she jumped onto Twitter real quick to call these out. Whereas it took her a while to speak out about this 13-year-old getting murdered. And I think that a mayor who is quicker to defend her personal whatever against like personal attacks than she is to, you know, not lie about a kid getting killed.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm just like, she got enough shit that she's doing wrong to attack for people not to resort to gendered or homophobic insults about her. Like her actions are bad enough. So let's just, as we criticize her, let's all remember to keep criticizing the right thing because there's plenty.
So as far as like what anyone can do about this, I mean, you know, like we've said many times, it's like hopefully, not hopefully, like, look, no, it's hard to know what it will take to have people's eyes opened that like the police broadly, all of them are not really reformable. You know, it's not like there is like a mass groundswell. And look, it doesn't mean you have to be out there on the street fighting police, although look, it may genuinely come to that, but maybe that you don't have to do that right this second. But like, everyone should be aware that like this needs to change, and not just in a sort of like reform them thing. Like this is never stopping. It is getting worse, and you see from the police's behavior, it's they are willing to assault people who dare ask them to stop being racist murderers. So like, what is like, that's, you know, in any other country in the world, that's like fascist military occupation essentially. So like, you know, just know that that's what we live under. And like, even if you, the listener, might be, you know, a person who largely benefits from that or whose life is okay. Like, that isn't really like how, that's not the reality of what we're living under. So,
and if you don't believe it, check out a travel warning from other countries for tourists thinking of coming to the US. And the warnings are, you know, we're like a red zone. We're like a level 4 do not travel for most other countries because of the coronavirus, because we don't have a handle on the pandemic, but mostly because of guns and police violence. Like, the warnings are, sure, you can go to America and have a great vacation, but you might get killed by the cops or get killed in a mass shooting. That will tell you, look at the way other countries look at us, and that'll tell you everything you need to know, even if you personally don't feel like it's affecting you or you don't notice it.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. But when other countries are trying to keep their citizens safe from the shit we have wrong with us, that's how you know.
Yeah. I mean, the shootings keep, you know, ramping up. I don't know. That's sort of like, I guess, unrelated to our show a little bit, except in as much as, like, you know, violence is extra back in America.
It does sort of feel like we just have to be the, it feels like we have to talk about everything bad, and it's kind of a struggle to just stay in our lane sometimes.
Yeah, that's what this show is. Mostly it's the bad shit.
Mostly it's a struggle. But we have a great interview with our old pal, Jana Schmieding. She's been on the show before. And, you know, I think it's so important. You know, our little corner where Andrew and I can kind of affect change is in Hollywood and is in where we work. And it's so important to support shows that are firsts for marginalized groups. So Rutherford Falls, which Jana's here to talk about, is the first show run created by Sierra Ornelas, by a Native person, about Native people, starring Native people with a largely Native writing room. And supporting it is one thing, like watching it is great, but I'm telling y'all, you need to tweet about it. You need to talk about the shows that you like that support marginalized groups, because that is the way that things get remade. That's the way that they get attention. You know, the marketing teams of Peacock TV, the marketing teams of whatever streaming service, the thing you're watching is on, will notice that, and you will contribute to people talking about it. And that's how things get, you know, to continue and get greenlit. That's how more opportunities get made. So that's just my little soapbox about being a micro influencer.
Well, and also, like, you know, it is like, obviously we've talked about this. I think probably I've talked about it mostly with Asian folks, but it is like a thing where it's like one part of seeing people's humanity broadly is the media. It's not the only part. And that is where I think a lot of, especially Hollywood people fall down. But it is a component of it. So it is like important that we, you know, as a nation, maybe start seeing Natives as human beings as opposed to like enemies and problems and, you know, tropes. And, you know, this is one way to start it. It's sort of necessary, but not sufficient, I guess, would be the way to think about it. So, yeah, all that serious intro. Let's take a little break and then we'll talk to Jana.
Yeah, so we're here with the star of the upcoming Rutherford Falls, which is out, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, it's out tomorrow. We're here with Jana Schmieding, friend of the show. Thanks for coming back.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Always. Anytime and always. Yeah, but congrats on the show. The trailer is hysterical. If you all haven't seen the trailer for Rutherford Falls on Peacock, you should look it up and check it out because it is so funny. It makes me very excited for the show. How has it been?
It's been great. It's been very strange. All of this has happened. It was a very fast process. Everything feels both fast and so slow, starting like in January of 2020. And, you know, I was hired as a staff writer and it was my first staff writing job. And I was just so overwhelmed with excitement about that. And then getting to write next to four other Native comedy writers was pretty mage. Under the tutelage of Mike Schur, which is like also pretty mage. And working for a Native showrunner, just all around mage.
And this is the these are like a slew of firsts, right? This is our first Native showrunner about a Native show that they created, right?
Correct.
It's
and it's
wild.
The first of many Native TV shows that have at least half of a writer's room comprised of Native people. Usually, wow. You know, if we are hired at all to write on a Native show, there's one.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Yeah, you're in as like the special consultant to make sure things aren't too fucked up, it seems like.
or we are literally hired as the consultant. I mean, I've consulted two different like writers before I was in the WGA, before I was actually staffed. Mm-hmm. I was kind of like asked to consult on white people's scripts that had mm-hmm. Native characters. And so, yeah, that's a weird compromising position to be in because, you know, right. You know, it's not going to go your way at all times. But like I was poor, so
yeah,
you can't really turn down the money. So now that we have like kind of a legitimate growing subcommittee in the WGA, people who have written on shows and now have experience in rooms and
mm-hmm.
and we have like a growing community of people who have been doing this for ages and also new, it feels like we're really actually carving out a space for ourselves finally in the year of our creator, 2021.
Yeah, what a wild year to have such an exciting thing happen. I'm sure it feels a little schizophrenic at times where you're like, am I allowed to be happy about this thing?
Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as natives, we're always like, of course, there's a pandemic during like our time.
Yeah.
Nothing ever comes easy for us.
Right. It's like, here you go, kind of.
Yeah.
Our room got shut down halfway through because of COVID, and we actually didn't know if we would have a show. We were on hold for a hot second. We didn't really know. You know, it was months until they decided to go into production for Rutherford Falls. So, it was like one of those things where we got, you know, after 2 weeks and realizing like, oh, we're not going back to in-person anything now.
Right.
You know, we had the remainder of our writer's room on Zoom and it was fine. And then on the last day, you know, Sierra and Mike and Ed, the co-creators, co-EPs of the show, kind of gave us a speech that was like, thank you. So this has been such a wonderful experience. And, you know, we're so excited. And I remember Ed Helms saying like, yeah, you guys, like, you know what? We're going to make this show. We're going to make this dang show, like kind of like pumping us up. And I was like, are we not making the show?
Yeah. Are you? It sounds like we're not.
Really scared me.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah. Nothing like a like too strong pep talk to be like, hold on, wait.
When you didn't know something was wrong.
Yeah. That was at the end of May, and then we started production in September. So it was quite a gap.
Wow.
Yeah.
Also, what a wild feeling to be like, you know, weirdly employed throughout this tough year when so many people aren't, making something that you love, not sure if it's going to, just what a roller coaster. It sounds very emotional.
It was very emotional. I mean, so much has been happening this year. You know, we've been confronting so many just extremely frustrating and traumatizing justice issues culturally. And, you know, COVID hit Indian country really hard in the first few months. And so it has been such a roller coaster is a perfect way to describe it. I don't really know. It's been kind of a blur, but also like, and you're exactly right, Tawny. Like I feel this entire time I've been like, it's so embarrassing to admit that like, while all of these very like distracting issues are happening in the world, like I'm having like the best year of my life career wise. Like,
yeah.
I got staffed and then I got cast on a show. I mean, like I'm hitting dreams that I never thought I would actually hit and getting to collaborate with people that I never thought I would be collaborating with. And it's just been wonderful, but also just like, oh God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, Jana, I totally get what you're talking about. And I feel like there's a weird double-edged thing that happens when, you know, groups that have been overlooked and who haven't gotten the chance to shine on screen and have the representation that other groups have suddenly get that. It's usually part of a result of great cries for that, like huge amounts of people screaming for that sort of thing, which unfortunately seems to also dovetail with violence happening to members of these communities.
100%.
So to then, right? So to then have these great things happen where it's like, okay, great, we've got the representation, we've got the TV show, but it is in the midst of terrible, terrible civil rights atrocities. It's just, it is so unfair, but it's such the like people of color's burden. It's I don't see it changing anytime soon. So I think you just have to feel okay celebrating what has been so great for you because it is so great. And I think you have to feel okay feeling, you know, empathy and hurt for the people who are hurting. It's all we can do.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately the show is kind of about being able to hold many truths at once. And that is a truth that I hold every day in my life, which is that I am thriving and my community is suffering. And, you know, like those two realities are just constantly at odds in my mind. So this is a just a very fortunate thing to be a part of. But I also am like very proud and honored to like be it on the TV screens, like in the homes of Native people, and to be making them laugh. Like that is the part of this work that I am genuinely so pleased with and brings me a lot of joy and hope, is that like for the first time Native people with access to like mainstream television are gonna have jokes that are written for them and delivered for them, and like they get to for once not be the butt of other people's jokes,
or
so
not
that's
be there
important
as
to me
flavoring to further some white person's
props.
Right.
Kevin Costner's props.
Oh, well, I'm ready for it. I'm excited for the show. It looks super funny. You and Ed already look like a cool team that is going to be very fun and funny to watch. So I'm excited for it.
Thank you. It was really fun to work on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to listen to some voicemails about racism? Any answer you give is both right and wrong.
Isn't that a fun thing after talking about your show?
I would love to, honestly. Let's dive in, folks.
Let's do it.
And we can keep the convo going about the show and about you too. We don't have to, you know, it can be loose.
Okay, great.
Hi, Andrew, Tawny, and guests. I heard your ad for BetterHelp, and I heard you say you can filter by the person's ethnicity or race. I tend to choose my health professionals by their race. Like, I actively have been going, I'm a white woman, and I have been looking for people of color as my health professionals in the past. And I'm wondering, like, when do you know if you're veering toward like fetishization or like tokenism, or like, I just genuinely think that people of color have a much more rich history of experience, lived experience, that is just much more dynamic than a white person. Anyway, I would just love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
This voicemail started to get into like the dad from Get Out territory, and I got a back up a little.
It got worse as it went
Anytime someone says person of color and rich history, I'm like, oh no. You have tapestries in your home. Oh no.
I know. That's like when anybody uses the word authentic to describe me or something that I do. I'm like, babe, it's as authentic as you are. So I don't know.
So we have an ad for, one of our sponsors is a online therapy thing, which has been really helpful to people during the pandemic. Cause you can't always, you know, you can't go see someone in person, but it does. One of the, I think, benefits of it is that you can filter by, you know, the ethnicity of the practitioner, which in my mind, I was only ever thinking of it for people of color to find people with similar experience, because that can be good.
Oh, Tawny.
It's like such
am I a dumb, naive little idiot?
It's such a double-edged sword. Like always those tools are available. It's like there's a right way and definitely a wrong way to use all that stuff. And not... mostly not necessarily saying the caller is like wrong, although I think you hit the nail on the head, which is the tone took a real, like, really dropped off a cliff about, I don't know, 70% of the way through the voicemail.
Yeah, I'd like to see how this person is on her apps, on her dating apps. Yeah. Are you who are you choosing to date? How are you determining who your preferences, you know, there's like these are just my preferences.
I know.
Are they?
Yeah. Or are you looking for a person of color to be like a magical being in your life who's going to fix
you? Yeah. That's the part that's like, so, cause it's like, yes, like there are many reasons to like have a doctor with, you know, like white doctors, like overlook all sorts of things and bring so many prejudices and to the table. But like, the richness of their history is not one of them.
Oh my God. I've made that mistake in my life where I, when I am choosing like a general practitioner, happened a few times because I've had different insurances over the course of living in Los Angeles, but like everyone, I try to look, because I am a person of size. I identify as a fat person. And so like I have real issues going to the doctor. I like always get told that I need to lose weight. Doesn't matter what I go in for. And so when I'm choosing a physician, I'm always looking for like a person who like looks kind of curvy or like looks like a fatter person, because I'm like, this person will be compassionate toward my issues. And I've been wrong every time.
Because they may have their own hangups about their size or whatever.
Or just like doctors just don't do reading. Yeah. They don't like study beyond their teaching. They just are like, yep, that obesity is an epidemic. And that's the facts. I read one article about it and now everything like hangs on somebody's obesity, but
it's just so wild. That's so lazy that it's like, no matter what you're going to them for, they're like, well, it's got to be traced to this. And you're like, actually, no, I fell off a skateboard and I broke my wrist. Can you please just give me a cast?
Truly, I need a cast. I mean, it's happened, like it's like documented, like people will go in for like, oh, I'm having like, you know, stomach pains. And they're like, well, you need to lose 50 pounds. And then the person comes back a year later and they're like, I have endometriosis, like late stage endometriosis, like you did not help me. It's wild. Yeah. It's cool being fat.
But that's a good point. What you're saying is that like even seeking out even what you think you're doing, so like for the caller, even what you think you're doing and like finding persons with rich histories, they might not be, because like I know plenty of black people that are like, you'd be better off with a woke white for sure, because like, you know, all skin folk ain't kin folk. Some of us are on the wrong path.
Yeah.
I wish I knew more native therapists. I would love to try one out, but I have a therapist who is a queer white woman. I'm pretty sure she identifies as a woman, and she's hardcore. She takes me there. So I'm sticking with it.
Yeah. You found what you need. I think that's the most important thing, is to find a person that's going to help you with your shit, no matter what they are.
I mean, I'm not even opposed to like, just like, I mean, I think it's just like, I would argue sort of like any medical practitioner of color, well, probably not East Asian people, I suppose, because they are, their stereotypes go the other way. But like every other person, it's like, you fucking had to work extra hard and be extra good, like, because of the way our teaching system works. Like, you are definitely better than someone who had the same grades as you if they were white.
But just a counterpoint, that can build its own set of biases, whereas you might look at a person of your same race as not working as hard, maybe not eating right, maybe not controlling their weight, maybe not doing the things that you thought, you know, like people of color too, we can get kind of poisoned and think like, well, I worked so hard to be this. And now you're coming to me with a fucking stomach ache. Get your life together, you know? So
totally.
I don't know. I know we veered off into medical, but I do think it still applies to the caller that like,
I think what it is to me, it's just that, like, I think we all kind of like the phrase richness of history is the one. And I think I keep going back to it because it's like, that's not a thing. Like, yeah. Like say, I guess it is like it's like a little weaselly because it's like, what do you mean? Like, do you mean like have faced prejudices like this? It's right. Not like, or whatever, or like see the world from a different perspective. But that specific phrase is like, that's how you describe like bad characters is like richness of history. This is, that's like, well,
and,
the trope.
And in the context of therapy, like why does the therapist need to have a rich history? Just read right. a book. Like read right, a book right, about right. their history. I don't know. Like inform yeah. yourself and then get a therapist who works.
Yeah.
Yeah. It almost sounds like you want someone to take you to task a little bit. Yeah. And now I'm guessing about the caller. So caller, if this is not you, don't get offended. We're just kind of talking about this. If this applies to another listener. But yeah, if that's what you want, if you want like a black or brown person, cause you think they're going to be quote, no nonsense or, you know, not let you get away with things. I don't know. It all kind of comes back to, you know, how you can change the voice of your GPS and they find that like men want women to tell them directions because they want women to tell them what to do more than men. It's just weird coded things like that in our,
yes.
you know, oh. like we think that a woman robot is going to be better at telling us where to go. We think that a black woman is going to whip us into shape mentally.
Right.
Because yeah. they're quote unquote tough. I don't know.
I do also think about the therapist and I'm like, oh great. The therapist is like, well, now I'm getting paid to do the emotional labor that I do normally in my like non-professional
life. I guess that's a better ultimate arrangement as far as that yeah. goes, I guess. I will say, actually, a couple weeks ago, my therapist did say, well, that's the white supremacy talking. And I do feel confident that that had something to do with the fact that she's black. Just to be fair.
Oh, sure.
As yeah. a counterpoint, I was like, oh, yeah. This is a lot less to explain to you than maybe someone else.
Uh-huh. But, yeah.
But maybe not. I think you're right that, Tani, it's like, it's not a guarantee, I suppose.
I'm just saying you could end up with a real, you know, because some of us, especially some of us who've worked so hard to get to where we are, there can be shame associated with what we look like. And that can mm-hmm. inadvertently get passed on to you. It's not even limited to like doctors and things like that. It's just, you know,
yeah.
It's mm-hmm. when we're all fighting over scraps, unfortunately, and that is the fault of white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Boom. I'm just glad that this caller is getting therapy.
That's
word
true.
For real. Everybody, I have a therapist. You know, it's been great. I know it's good because sometimes I'm like, I don't want to talk to you because I know that like it means I have to do work. So I'm like, I'm too busy, and she's like, are you?
I know.
Are you, or do you just not want to tell me what's up? I'm like, leave me alone. I have to work.
I almost did that today. I was like, I don't want to, but I did.
That's how you know you
almost backed out.
Well, I also was like, I'll be honest. I keep scheduling therapy too close to the podcast recording sessions, and I was like, I got to do work for the podcast, but.
Is that on purpose so that you can come to this like in a good frame of mind?
It is not. It is mostly, it's on purpose mostly because it's like, if I'm going to sit my ass down in front of the computer or the microphone, I might as well just do it all together.
Got it.
But it's not wise. It is not wise. Yeah. It's laziness. Should we do the other voicemail? Let's do another voicemail.
Hi guys. I'm calling in because I started a new job, and every day I go to this job, I live with this moment replaying in my head. Because I moved across the country, and so this is a new job for me, and I'm part Native, part Hispanic and white. And the Native part of my family is Southwestern to the United States, Navajo, but I grew up in the Pacific Northwest going to powwows and things there, but I'm still not super involved in my culture, and I'm trying to be, but it came up at work that I was Native because I was made a dish and then had some, and my girl said, oh, I'm Native too, and then saying like what sounded like a sort of racist shanty, and like I blacked out. I could not remember the words after it happened because I just, it had some like vocalizations in it that I just had a moment with. And so I was just wondering if it's, and I don't, I know you guys might not have the answer, but you might be able to give me some comedic relief on whether or not there are any sort of like pop culture or like children's songs related to not white people that aren't racist. Anyways, I love the show. I hope at least you guys get a laugh. Thank you so much. Bye.
So the caller is part Native. Their coworker is not and was doing a racist joke?
That part is unclear. I think if I recall, is said they were Native, but the implied scare quotes around said, I suppose, you know, like, okay, who knows, it sounded like a white presenting person, and then started singing like a children's-ish song that sounded to the caller's ear to be racist.
Got
and mostly then the caller said, are there any like children's songs about other cultures that aren't racist? And I was going to take that short leap to be like, well, there's about to be a not racist show about Natives on Peacock.
Yes.
Starting. Yeah, there we go. My first thought was Day Coloris.
That was honestly my train of thought.
The only children's song I could think of that I learned as a child that did not seem racist was Day Coloris, but I'm sure someone can tell us why that song actually is racist. Feel free to hit us up and let us know.
Oh, Day Coloris.
But otherwise, a lot of them are pretty, just because they're overly simplistic, so they tend to feel bad.
Well, I feel like also like most nursery rhymes were written by like, you know, British colonialists. So yeah, it's like, there's like almost by definition, it's like teaching your kids what this type of people is like via, you know, the guns you have pointed at them with your little fucking khaki suit on.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, all that children's shit can get traced back to something racist. Like, I used to really love the story of Rikki Tikki Tavi, the mongoose that ate snakes. But if you look at it, it's just an allegory for colonialism, because it was about colonizers who moved there and then wanted to kill all the snakes. And it's like, these snakes were fine. They didn't need this mongoose showing up. Anyway, that's my Rikki Tikki Tavi aside.
I mean, everything for kids. There's also like, I was thinking back, I forget, it came up in, I don't know, probably a group chat or something. But, you know, like the way I don't even remember what the name of it is, but the music they use in like ice cream trucks in New York, at least, is like,
sure,
the words to it are like so racist. And you're like, oh, God. I don't even remember what they are, but it's just one of those things. It's like so much of like our childhoods is like, you know, racist, because again, we as a culture talk to kids and just train them to be racist. I don't know. It's sort of just like, but I'm not attached to any of that shit. So it's like, yeah, throw it out. Who cares? It's racist. Throw it out. Who cares? It's racist. Who cares?
Oh, yeah. I'm sitting here and I'm honestly trying to think like, do I know this person? Because like, hey girl, are we friends? Because I grew up in the Pacific Northwest as well and was very much a powwow kid and have had so many of these exact same situations. I worked at an education nonprofit here in Los Angeles, and I heard the founders and a CEO is not for a nonprofit. What is the leader of a nonprofit? President? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was like, maybe it could be CEO. I don't know.
Maybe the leaders of this nonprofit, this public education nonprofit for Los Angeles, were white women of a certain age. And I remember, you know, telling the group of people that I worked with, like, I'm Native. And the other Black folks and people of color were like, oh, cool, that's great. You know, like these, my colleagues were like, nice, like just very accepting. And then of the response from the president or the leader of this and nonprofit, she goes, oh yeah, I also, I have been tracing back my lineage. And I have, you know, Cherokee ancestry, apparently. Like, it was just like, she didn't even know if it was true or not, but she like had to say something. And I was like, now, did you have to?
Did you have to? You didn't have to.
You didn't have to. It was not important.
You didn't have to bring this up.
No, you don't. You don't cheapen my identity with your like need to be oppressed.
Right. I've been oppressed this whole time, and I didn't even know it. That's what I learned.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's what those. That's what that like DNA shit does. Is it allows people to go, can you believe I've been part of this marginalized group and I've been experiencing injustice this whole time? And it's like, girl, you didn't even know. So no, that don't count. That's not what this is about.
I don't know if you have been actually.
Yeah. I think you've actually been fine, and now you just have a trivia.
Yeah.
It is obviously a little tricky because like. You also, it's hard to put, you know, you don't want to police like how, you know, what percentage of someone's
identity.
Heritage makes them real. But it is like, I think there is something of the, like, I just learned this from 23andMe that really makes it pretty clear that like, well, it's not your identity.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very complicated like conversation that is happening at all times in Indian country is like what makes a person Native, and ultimately the reality of this whole situation is because of colonialism and genocide and the ways in which we have been separated from our ways and our communities and our religion and our spirituality. There's each of us has like traces of markers, cultural touchstones that make us feel like we're part of this group. But it's not a melanin based system of identity, of identifying, you know, it's very much a political affiliation. If we understand it as nation to nation, then we start to see, just becomes a little more illuminated how tricky it is to, you know, if like a Swedish citizen moves to the UK and is still white, but is a Swedish person living, you know, it's just like, that's kind of like where I have to use those like kind of metaphors to like help us understand how we are living on our own land. Like, this is our country. These are our lands, but they have been colonized and now it's called something else. And we belong to this specific nation that exists in this region, but we were moved to this nation. You know, it's just like so much. There's so much. And because of all these different like government sanctioned methods of genocide, so many people have been separated and are doing the work of connecting, reconnecting, staying connected, which is actually work.
Yeah.
And it really is not helpful when people who are not doing that work of connecting, reconnecting, staying connected are popping off with, oh my God, I have a Cherokee grandma. Like, that's just, that makes it also erases us as a people by saying, oh, you can just get a 23andMe and identify that. Like, that. All this shit that I've been trying to like maintain it as a part of my identity and who I am and keep alive for like my children and my children's children, like all of that is just like fucking bullshit according to your like your blood DNA.
Yeah, you sent away. I mean, truly, all those DNA tests have become the new like Publishers Clearinghouse, like CD clubs, where it's like you put $50 in the mail and you get back a bunch of CDs about your ethnicity. Jana, this leads me to, I wanted to ask what your character in Rutherford Falls, what nation is she from? And how was that decided, like in the writer's room, where this was going to take place and where she'd be from?
Yeah, her nation is called the Minneshanka Nation. It is a fictitious nation in the Northeast. And we made that decision because the Sierra Teller Ornelas, our showrunner, tells a really interesting story about, and I'll just paraphrase it to give it some context, but she worked at the National Museum of the American Indian in DC for many years before she was a TV writer. And she had this group of people came through the museum, or maybe they called the museum, but they were like, hey, we're looking for the, I don't know if it was like Sonomish or like some Washington, some Pacific Northwest tribe. And they were like, we are interested in learning more about them. And we are trying to understand how to become wolves, like werewolves, because of Twilight.
Oh,
right. My Lord.
Yeah. Oh, my so Lord. Like it became very apparent to her in that moment that like, it's so easy for, she says, like with the flick of the pen to change things for communities, like so drastically. Like, can you imagine being that nation and having like inundated with white people coming into the onto yes. their lands, being like, we want to learn about werewolves? Like, it's just yeah. insane, you know? I mean, there's
or any
a lot
fun
of, like,
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, anything fun thing you all play for laughs then gets attributed to a whole people.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that can be really dangerous. It's also, you know, when you use a specific nation, you are basically choosing to use their cultural ways, their spirituality, their language, their all of the things that identify them. And if you fuck that up, it's very mm-hmm. disrespectful. And so we sort of decided that we didn't want to, we would never like fuck with our people in that way.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And we had a very diverse native writing staff. So we have people from all different walks of life, all different nations coming together to write on this show. And we decided to put it in the, or they decided to put it in the Northeast because we're talking about history. We're talking about early colonization and sort of the Northeast is kind of where all of that went down. And so we decided a fictitious tribe would be the safest one. And I guess ultimately, what we're pulling from is like a lot of pan native tropes and commentary and context, which I think is still funny. You know, we still are able to have specifics without being so specific that people are going to go to a nation and be like, sure. Oh my God, where's Big Larry, the statue yeah. of Nathan? You know, it's like none of that. And also the white history is fake too, you know? So it's like, yeah. Let's be fair for both sides.
Right. Yeah. I was just going to say, there's so many shows with white folks that just take place in a fake fucking town with
fake types
of people, you know, like I'm excited to see folks of color get to do that too. And to be able to, it sounds like be able to represent a lot of different types of native culture.
Yeah. And exactly. Just to be able to like use our own experiences. And as you know, as a native person, I commune and friends with in community with so many different people from so many different nations. You know, mm-hmm. I grew up around a lot of Oregon natives, a lot of Warm Springs people, Calpulla people, you know, and like Northern California natives. And I moved to LA and now I'm like friends with a bunch of Navajos. Like there's just like, we are very intertribal in our communities. And so there are attributes and you know, culturally specific experiences that we share and have mm-hmm. in common. And it's still going to be funny and delightful mm-hmm. and like identifiable for Native people, despite sure. the fact that it's not like a specific nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's cool.
Awesome. Jana, thank you so much for coming on our show and congratulations. Yeah. And yeah, we're so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I love seeing you both. And I just, I'm so honored to be on the show right now.
Of course. For the listeners, Rutherford Falls, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, it premieres tomorrow, Thursday, the 22nd. And that's on Peacock TV, right? Mm-hmm. And I also think you should follow Jana on Twitter. She's a great Twitter follow. Funny, insightful, good shit. So will you give them your handle for us?
Yeah. It's Jana Unplugged on Twitter and Instagram. And that Unplugged is spelled in a very America Online way. you can't miss me.
You'll find it. You'll find it.
Oh, well, thanks so much for coming. This is the end of our show. So we're going to say our things. You can find us at Yo Is This Racist or at Trondi Newman or at Andrew T. Call in with your voicemails. Yep.
3233897223. I don't know. I was trying to contribute. I felt like you got it all.
I always freak out at the phone number. That's 3233389 race. Call in with your racism questions. Tune into Rutherford Falls. Follow Jana. And yeah, that's it.
Peace.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. This is Suboptimal.